Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right, and hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 179 of the show. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gongi-Ruzic, joined as always by Sammy Rowan. And we're back with some Whitecaps chatter, as well as some CPL roundup. It's that busy time of year. You've got playoff clinching scenarios across both leagues, MLS and CPL. I mean, in CPL, a couple teams clinching now, and MLS, it was surprising to see, you know, St. Louis, shout out to them, clinching the first spot in the West, the first of many, and then in the East, now already half of the teams have booked with a weird disparity there. The Whitecaps, of course, looking to join St. Louis in that, and to be fair, they're not that far away, but also with how tight the standings are, they're not that far away from being right back out of the picture altogether. Despite that, solid week for them. Overall, they get a win, they get a loss on the road in MLS. 3 points from two road games. Never that bad. But before we dive into those two road games themselves, Sam, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, doing pretty well. I think the up and downs of the road journey in MLS are pretty much inevitable, right? And we saw that midweek in Houston. The luck caught up with Vancouver eventually, and there's some, you know, part of it is just the way she goes a little bit, and then there's some individual reasons maybe why things didn't go so well at Houston. So we're gonna dive into that in this one. Also, revel a little bit in the triumph of a victory in Toronto at BMO Field over TFC. You know, can't pass over that too quickly. Got to take a little bit of enjoyment out of it. And then looking ahead, I mean, this is, as you said, Alex, this is the business portion of the schedule. Things really moving quite quickly, both in the CPL and Major League Soccer. So, you know, the Whitecaps got RSL this weekend upcoming, another 6-pointer that's going to be massive. It's it feels like we're speaking in a lot of hyperboles on this road trip because, you know, we were saying how huge that week was where they secured 7 of 9 points. And now after a loss in Houston, their first loss of the road trip, now all of a sudden it feels like the stakes are ratcheted up again, which is, it just goes to show how tight the Western Conference is. I also think it's exciting, though, that, you know, the Whitecaps have, even really since the League's Cup break, they've raised the expectations for themselves, right? Like, not getting a result in Houston, disappointing in a way it might not have been early in the season, and I think that's exciting. So you know, this is a good group, and I think the rest of the season, what's left of it, is going to be interesting to follow along. So going to dive into all those storylines, looking forward to diving in as always.
Yeah, I mean, someone said about the Houston game, they told me, and I thought it was funny. They're like, it reminds me of old Caps. But the fact that, you know, again, like, that's MLS. You're losing on the road to a Houston team that's now undefeated in 7. If that's, you know, if that's bringing up negative reactions, look, the Whitecaps have played 5 out of 7 games on their mammoth super road trip, whatever you want to call it, and they've claimed 10 points. That's 2 points per game on the road. You would have told anyone that the Whitecaps were going to go out and get 1.5 points per game on the road, you'd be laughing, let alone 2. And the fact now, I mean, we'll dive into as well what lies ahead. RSL and Colorado away. I mean, they're never easy, especially for the Whitecaps to go to those locales. But based on the form those teams in, the Whitecaps could conceivably get, you know, 4 to 6 points and really finish this road trip off on a high note. But that's just the reality of how far things have come. This is a team that should be pushing, like we've mentioned all year, top four in the West. And now with how things are, I mean, even despite this Houston setback, there's a legitimate scenario in which the Whitecaps could be pushing for top seed in the West, let alone, you know, top three over the next few weeks. Of course, they must keep winning to do that. And that's, you know, going to be the key aspect. But it just shows how far things have come. But I guess speaking of how far things have come, I mean, we could talk about Toronto and just the contrast of these two teams. Toronto, you know, 5 years ago, they were the talk of MLS, playing in the Champions League finals, playing in, you know, MLS Cup finals, winning MLS Cups. And then you look at now, they're on the my favorite stat from the ruthless Apple TV broadcast is that they could become the first non-expansion team to finish bottom two in MLS 3 years in a row. Currently, they sit, I think, tied for last after their drubbing in midweek by Miami. So it's not looking good for TFC. And for Vancouver, completely turned things around, back-to-back Canadian championships, pushing for playoffs, pushing in Champions League and Champions Cup. How the tables have turned. And I mean, this game itself, it was a lot closer than I'm sure the Whitecaps would have hoped, playing a TFC team at the bottom of the table, but fresh out of international break. You could tell they were a bit rusty, and the fact they went out and got a good, resilient 2-1 comeback win. I mean, it was pretty much all you could ever ask for on the road, right, Sam?
Well, I think in Toronto, they continued the theme of turning imperfect performances into 3-point results, right? Because they sort of had a feeling out process. They weren't entirely sharp at times. They get scored on first, and then the response is pretty much immediate. It felt like all of a sudden the Whitecaps put the pedal down, took control of the match, and really never looked back. And I mean, no more perfect example than that second Whitecaps goal where Ryan Gauld just, you know, feels like he's playing with the TFC defense. I mean, what I loved about that, what I thought was a bit underrated, is that, yes, you know, TFC did not cover themselves in glory on that second goal, to say the least. But I love the way that Raposo and Gauld, they sort of like played it out. Gauld kept using the threat of going wide down the wing to just keep the defender from committing fully, created all kinds of space. And then, I mean, the cross and the header into the bottom corner was picture perfect. And I think that's, you know, when the Whitecaps are playing at their best, that's what you want it to look like, right? Just kind of your two best players flowing in rhythm, feeding off of each other. And I think that was tremendous in the sense that, again, the Whitecaps just really buckled down when they knew they needed to turn it up to get a result. And you can discount it as much as you want, but this is a Canadian rivalry. This is a TFC team, I'm sure, that had this one circled on the calendar to, you know, can they take a bite out of a rival? Can they add some meaning to their season? And also, they were coming off a win as well. So this was, you know, not that Toronto's been in good form really at all this season, but it's, you know, maybe about as good as they've been feeling about themselves in a while, with Bernadeschi and Insigne actually playing some decent football. At least turning up and being in the starting 11, match in, match out for once. So I thought the Whitecaps did a pretty solid job. So, you know, that was really more of the same from the week previous, it felt like. And obviously there was a bit of a shift midweek, but good things to report. I think that Ryan Raposo was like one huge takeaway from that match as well, where he continued his really strong form since those other Canadian wingbacks have come in. He's playing with a lot of urgency, and with Sam Atacubi dealing with some knee issues, some just kind of, you know, fitness ramping up type stuff, an opportunity continues to present itself for Raposo.
Yeah, and I think overall it's good, just because these are the sort of wins you need to rack up over the course of a season where, look, you're on the road, you're not playing your best, and you find a way. And I think, again, about the big takeaway for me of watching that game was just Ryan Gauld again, just it was one of those where it might not have been his most, you know, dominant performance on paper, say. Like, you know, he's obviously had a couple of games where he's had three goal contributions. He's had a couple multi-goal games, couple two assist games. So this one where he only got one assist might not stand out on paper. But for me, my money, this might have been his most dominant performance all year long, because it was just the way he put the team on his back, and it was just not on the ball. It was also off the ball. Like, he was just running everywhere. He's willing, you know, bullying the defenders into giving him back the ball and then putting it right back down and creating chance after chance after chance. He probably could have had a goal and four assists like genuinely with how many chances he was creating for his teammates. And I feel that obviously that felt like that rubbed off, because I think it was what was good with the Whitecaps energy. It was something where, yeah, the performance wasn't necessarily the sharpest. There's a few actions where their passes were sloppy. They shot when they should have passed. They should have passed when they should have shot. Like there's a few where it's just like, you know, a bit not as polished as we're used to seeing, but it was just the work, right? Like Ali Ahmed was winning back so many, you know, his counter press, his interceptions in midfield was just, he was relentless, forcing all sorts of turnovers. Ryan Raposo was everywhere on that left side. I think of that one where he made the turnover and he was the one who ended up forcing Federico Bernardeschi into, you know, cutting inside and right into a tackle. And it was like that sort of work right across the board. There were several examples. And I think it was just overall the sort of effort you want to see in a tough scenario where, yeah, maybe you're not playing your best. TFC goes up a goal. You're facing a bit of an adversity. And I think credit also has to be given to Ryan Gold, because as the captain, that sort of effort that he was showing, I think rubs off players. And I think you could tell when, because if you're a guy and you're sitting there, if you're the, you know, if you're, say, Ryan Raposo, or if you're one of the defenders, like, how can you not be inspired when your captain, who, you know, has every reason to walk around, and he's, you know, he's the DP number 10, he's the star man, he has everything to walk around. I mean, you see the Italians on the other side certainly taking advantage of that privilege, yet Gold is just tracking all the way back, he's running up, he's back and forth. You felt like it kind of rubbed off. And I think, again, that continues to show the value of Gold. Of course, you can talk about the goal contributions, the stats, but I think in a game like this, he shows that almost his leadership, you could say, because again, he's not out there screaming and really being a traditional captain, but he just has this way of putting things on his shoulders and, you know, being a captain where he just gets to the front of the bus, he sits in the driver's seat and he says, look, let's come along for the ride.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that, yeah, as you said, the thing that really stood out was the way Gold absolutely hassled TFC defenders and midfielders. You know, if they took a heavy touch, if they weren't quite prepared to release the ball from their feet quickly, there was no respite. Ryan Gold was hawking you down aggressively. And, you know, both him and Brian White together, I think, did a really, really nice job putting that TFC, you know, back 6-7 under pressure. And TFC never was really all that comfortable building in possession at all the entire match. And so I think, you know, that's, again, when Vancouver's been at their best, really strong, it's led from those two at the front of the line, providing that intensity. And I mean, obviously Ryan Gold, you know, that's not something you expect from a number 10 designated player, but it's also not something you always get from a striker. And I think that I continue to be impressed by, you know, not just Brian White's goal contributions, but also all the other little things that he does to have an impact on the match. Now, Alex, we gotta talk about, I guess, the only real negative out of the TFC match that was a bit of a precursor for what would happen midweek, which is just, again, it's really been the same issue all season long. It's these moments of losing defensive structure, losing your shape, communication, just like a classic case of switching off at the back. And, you know, the Whitecaps get punished, ultimately doesn't come to hurt them too much against Toronto, but obviously it would hurt them midweek.
Yeah, look, I think, I mean, I'll continue to, I'm not supposed to sound the alarm, because that sounds like, you know, like extreme in the sense that, like, oh, you know,
this is a situation we've been monitoring for a long period of time and will continue to monitor, because again, it's one of these things where the Whitecaps just need to take the step, if they can, from mediocre defensive side to MLS average defensive side. And it would make a world of difference. You turn some of these, now they've been doing a better job on this road trip of turning those 50-50 results in their favor, but it would give you that extra boost. And it just, there's still moments where they're falling short of average MLS side defensively.
Well, that's why I don't want to say sound the alarm, because that sounds like very much like a we told you so kind of energy, but it's very much like, again, this has been a worry all year long. And I think if you're looking at the Whitecaps MLS Cup hopes, you can argue that offensively, there's MLS Cup potential. There is. Like, again, this is not like hyperbole. This is still the top team in MLS and XG, XG per game as well. Like, they're generating the chances to win games, but it's just you're not winning many games if you're going to be allowing sloppy goals, especially in the playoffs. Like, now in the regular season, like against TFC, they got away with it. You can allow one sloppy one against TFC. You're playing a TFC team where their confidence was shot, and you saw it as soon as Blackman scored, and it was 1-1. It was all of a sudden, it was panic stations. It was like, oh, shoot, we were. Like, for 5 minutes, they're like, we're winning. Like, all is good. And then Blackman scored, and it was just that confidence went away. As you're going to play good teams, you can't be giving away cheap goals. And again, precursor to what happens in Houston midweek. So we can even say the alarms were sounded against TFC and they weren't really responded to in time for this Houston game. The defense is a big worry, because I think that's something where genuinely that's the difference between you falling in the first round and that's you going all the way to MLS Cup. Because it's, of course, goals matter. Goals matter to get you to the playoffs, and goals, of course, are going to win you games in the playoffs. But you're going to need the defense to at least work for you. And it was just, again, the goal against TFC was just so, it was laughably sloppy, in the sense the ball just falls to Insigne and it's one simple pass right down the middle, and then DeAndre Kerr is gone. And it's something where it's like, first of all, you know Insigne is going to be looking for a killer pass like that, so why is no one kind of closing him down? Also, you know DeAndre Kerr is a speedster. That's kind of like why TFC likes playing him up front versus some of the other profiles. And it was just like, it just happened so quickly. And it was also, it was just almost funny the way it happened in a way, because it's not like an intricate breakdown. It's not something like, oh, well, the six didn't step, and then the, you know, center back didn't recover. Like, it was just something where it was very simple. And again, maybe we're asking a lot in this case, but it just felt like a goal that was very avoidable at the time. And even looking back, it still feels quite avoidable.
Well, it was one of those ones too, where if I'm remembering correctly, they'd had a set piece and then they tried to almost immediately play another cross back in, and that was headed away. And I think Ranko was still forward for the set piece, and he even went up for that second cross header, I think, and didn't win it. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, now we have no shape at the back. And I wonder too, I mean, this is, you know, it's always low hanging fruit to put some sort of blame on the goalkeeper in this kind of scenario. But Takaoka just doesn't, he's not going to like come out and charge and put the shooter under a ton of pressure. Like, to me, it was just, there was way too much time there to place it wherever he wanted. And you know, I that's not Takaoka's specialty. And of course it goes without friggin' saying, the Whitecaps shouldn't be allowing that kind of chance. So it's not actually on the goalkeeper, but it's one where it's like, man, I'd love a keeper who just comes out, makes himself massive, makes the shooter uncomfortable. And then it's like, okay, if you have the composure and you slot it home, good for you, but at least, you know, present a challenge rather than sort of just kind of letting the shooter do what they want. But needless to say, I mean, a different goal than really anything they gave away against Houston, but I think, you know, signs of the same or similar struggles.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think there's many scenarios where a striker should be 1v1 against a goalie from the half line. That's usually, that's never a good sign.
Generally, no matter what, something has gone wrong.
And yeah, even like the lead up to it, because I think Ranko turned over the ball, funnily enough, because he had that foray earlier in the game where he had the, let's just say, questionable shot from distance. But like, all right, you're always allowed one a game. But then he went for it again, was dribbling. I think he lost the ball in the dribble, and then everything fell apart from there as well. So it was just a sequence of events that was worth forgetting. But overall, I mean, they got the win, so you forget about it, you laugh, you move on. They got three crucial points for a second there. I think they're up to third with the results around them in MLS. And then Seattle ended up getting a comeback, and there were some other things that went against them. They ended up finishing the match day in fourth, though, in that vaunted top four position with some games in hand. Of course, now, though, as of recording, they're now down to fifth. And a big reason for that is their midweek visit, as they then went home to Vancouver, which, first of all, I thought that was a bit surprising in the sense that, like, again, I mean, it makes sense because, you know, if you can go home, see family, get your morale up, etc. Like, you know, it's something where I'm never going to fault that, but it is a bit surprising because you did just come off an international break where, you know, most players were based in Vancouver because, you know, like other than Kubas and Cordova, who ends up leaving anyways, and Jervaine Brown, there weren't many players on international duty. It feels a bit surprising to travel across country from Toronto to Vancouver and then leave from Vancouver all the way down to Houston, because that's not an easy journey. I think it's still like 4 or 5 hours of flight.
I was going to say, as someone who's regrettably made the flight from Vancouver to Houston and actually from Toronto to Houston a couple times, both those flights are like, I always thought the first time I went from Vancouver to Houston, I was like, oh, it's like LA. It's, you know, 2.5 hours. It's like, no, this is like 4.5 hours. It is a serious flight. I mean, it's really far south, which you kind of forget about. So that's like essentially, it's like going to Toronto twice in a way within the week, you know, you're making that 4 to 5 hour journey. So obviously they value the home training session, but I also think too, like, you know, not a performance trainer or anything like that, but might be nice to have a day or two in the Houston heat to get used to that before you play in match conditions. I think to train it, you know, in kind of completely different environment in Vancouver and then head down to the heat and humidity, especially with, you know, all the strain that's already going to be on the body from a road trip. And they were just home for a good little stretch too, right? So, you know, it hasn't been a 7-game road trip in totality where they've been out on the road the entire time. So I was a little surprised by that too, but obviously, you know, they've got people punching the keyboard and figuring out the optimal recovery and all this kind of stuff. So I'm sure they have their reasons, even if we can think of other reasons why it might have made sense just to go straight to Houston.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have to acknowledge that we're coming from this of a perspective of, you know, not the sports science or, you know, et cetera. But it is just surprising, especially because it's the international break. Like, I would have got it maybe if you're like, you've just been on the road for like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and you want to get home even for a day or two just to reset. But it felt like a bit weird, especially like right off the international break. Because like we mentioned, like, other than the like three players that were gone internationally, like most guys were home, most guys were training. And it just, you know, you add in the humidity because it's a bit cold in Vancouver. And it's a rough stretch, but it's like, especially the way things lined up, it's like you go from Toronto to Houston, you get used to the heat, and then you go from Houston to RSL, which again, you save some travel there, as I think they're doing. Because I mean, no way you're going back to Vancouver with a Wednesday, Saturday turnaround. And then you can just stay out there to go to Colorado, which is quite close to Salt Lake as well. Yeah, it's rough, but that's still what, like a week and a half. And then what's nice is that from there on, like, three of the last four games are at home. And what's your away trip at Seattle? That's one that gets done in like, you know, half an hour flight there, half an hour flight back. Like, it's one of those where, yeah, you maybe a bit of a short-term pain, but you know, you've got a fortunate schedule at the end of the year. So yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a bit surprising. It's something where, you know, given that everyone has to deal with an MLS, it's hard to say, oh, the humidity, all the travel, but it's something where, if you know, why the extra strain if you don't need to? So I mean, it is just something worth noting. Either way, one thing was for sure, the Whitecaps just didn't have their legs. And was it the travel, was it the fatigue, what was it, who knows? But it was overall, I mean, it was a pretty flat performance, I'd say. 4-1 loss to Houston. To give credit to Houston, they've been in red hot form. I think entering the game they'd been on a 6-game undefeated run. You know, they'd only allowed one goal. They'd scored something like 10 or 11 goals across that stretch. So obviously they're in a pretty good position after this. They've climbed up to top four. They've been playing some great football too. It's not just the results. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to see that goal they scored against, I think it was St. Louis on the weekend, where it was like just that unbelievable tiki-taka. Like, Houston's got something going on under Ben Olsen. That's been, can't say many people had that in their bingo cards heading into the year. But overall, so the combination of red hot Houston, fatigue, everything, Whitecaps just looked flat, and ultimately was a tough performance on the night.
No, I mean, I would co-sign all of that. It seems like Houston's building something kind of good there. Like, there's finally a bit of an identity to this Dynamo team that I don't feel like I've maybe experienced, following MLS. So that's cool. And I think it's an interesting team. Obviously, as you mentioned, their form had been fantastic going into the match. And, you know, we talked about a little bit the travel, the fact that the road trip might be starting to catch up with this team a little bit. And I think the one thing we were chatting about before the show, Alex, that we both mentioned was the lineup, the setup for this match was maybe a little bit of a surprise. I think, you know, we all want to see Pedro Vite and Ali Ahmed together, but in a match against a red hot team where structure, and kind of defensive solidarity at times was going to be really important, I think that was a bit of an interesting decision. And then pair that with, yes, Ranko Veselinovic needs rest at some point. He can't start every match, but I think just pairing leaving Ranko out of the lineup with those two younger midfielders together was certainly interesting and ultimately didn't really go the way the Whitecaps wanted to go. I mean, even Andres Kubas, you know, obviously ever reliable in the midfield, but he's just coming off an injury as well. And you're asking him to carry a lot of water then with, you know, some inexperience in the midfield in front of him, a new back line behind him. It was a lot to take on. You add that to the travel and all the other stuff. I think it was just, ultimately, this felt to me like one where maybe the setup for Vanni Sartini was never quite right. I mean, yes, you're limited by guys like Kubas and Adekubi coming off injury, so you do have one hand tied behind your back a little bit. But I don't know. I thought, you know, the experienced head of an Alessandro Schopf, Ranko, could you have rested Ranko against Toronto? Could you have rested Ranko this upcoming weekend in RSL? I'm not 100% confident that this was the right match to hold some veterans out to experiment a little bit. And, easy to say in hindsight, obviously, when they lose 4-1. But yeah, curious for your thoughts, Alex.
Yeah, I feel like it almost feels like, and again, this doesn't feel like the right term, like it feels harsh, but it almost felt like a bit of overconfidence from Vancouver, if that makes sense. Because also Vancouver's in good form of their own. Like heading into this game, they'd won 3 of their last 4 and drew the other. That's all on the road. Like that's very impressive for MLS. And they've been playing good football on the road, like for patches, and have been grinding out the games in the other patches. So it almost felt like, you know, with some of the lineup decisions, I wonder if like also Vancouver is like, all right, screw it. Like, let's go toe to toe with Houston. And it's kind of like, it's like when you're, again, we'll go to the, you know, the boring old boxing adage. Like, again, maybe you think, all right, like I've been on a great run. Like I've been knocking guys out. Like, let me just kind of, you know, you're going up against another guy with knockout power and you're just kind of like, all right, like, yeah, let's go in, let's go toe to toe. And next thing you know, you're like, you're just getting hit over and over. You're like, oh, maybe I should have gone a bit more defensive and stuck to what worked a bit more for me. Cause it felt like the Whitecaps kind of wanted to go toe to toe. And it was kind of like, well, you're going up against a red hot Houston team. You're in the heat, you're on the road. Like there was kind of no reason to go that gung ho. Like I get, maybe you go start the first half easy, maybe you end like the half nil nil, you know, maybe you're even, you know, maybe you're down only 1-0 and then you go for it in the second half. But it always feels bold to go that heavy, especially because it's something where even if it works out for you early, you risk kind of burning out as the game goes on. Of course, the gamble you're making there is that you have a 1 or 2 nil lead like they've had at some of the other games where they've gone gung-ho on the road. Like Portland is an example where they went absolutely guns a-blazing. But even Portland, like they went out so strong and then they kind of faded as the game went along and nearly, you know, ended up drawing in the end. It was kind of something where it's like...
Well, in Portland, terrible form, terrible home record, just fired a coach. Whereas Houston's the polar opposite of that, right?
Well, that's it. And I think that's kind of what we said. We're kind of talking about a pre-show. Like there's just one where it feels like the Whitecaps also got the approach wrong. And I don't know if it's overconfidence. I don't know if it's just what, but it's because it's like you mentioned with Portland, it makes sense to go gung ho. They're struggling and it worked. Like the Whitecaps got a lead. They couldn't give up even against Chicago as well. Another team, they went strong from the start and they were able to grind it out. Did it with TFC. They went strong from the start. They took a blow of themselves, but they just kept after it and were rewarded. It felt like this one, there's kind of no reason. This was also one of those where you look at the schedule, you look at where Houston was at in the stands, you look at their form. I don't think anyone's complaining if you leave there with a draw as well. Like, it's something where if you go a little pragmatic, you grind out a 0-0, a 1-1. I don't think anyone would have been mad because you would have been ahead of Houston. So you would have still been the top four. You obviously have the games in hand, all of that. Like, it was just a bit of a surprise to go toe to toe. I think you could kind of feel it early because right away there was just a tide of orange. Like, we can talk about how the Ryan Raposo yellow at the start was soft. It was still a foul, and it was still something where Houston, within the first 2 minutes, had already created a dangerous transition moment by Vancouver's kind of wanting to be aggressive and, you know, wanting to play on the front foot. And I think it's something where, look, as much as, like we say, you want to have that identity, you want to be front-footed, you want to do all that, there's sometimes, especially on the road in MLS, at home, you can go up against anyone at home and be aggressive. It's MLS, right? You can, you're playing, you know, Cincinnati, like the Whitecaps did, and you can go all out. Like, that's fine. That's, you know, all in good. But on the road, sometimes it feels like you have to pick your moments. And it felt like one where the Whitecaps maybe should have, and they didn't. And again, maybe we're sitting here talking with hindsight and it's something, but I do agree. Even from the start, you look, it's like, it's an aggressive lineup. And it's kind of like, was that necessary? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, and I hear, here's something that's indicative too. I think it's, this would obviously, I'd read into this differently if they hadn't gone aggressive. They went defensive structure and just trying to hold it down. But Brian White on the night, 67 minutes, 13 touches, 5 completed passes. So if you're, Brian White's not a high volume guy. Like, those numbers, he's never going to have 78 touches, 53 completed passes. Like, he's not a number 10. He's not a number 8. So, you know, I'm not trying to make a crazy point here, but at the same time, when the Whitecaps play aggressively on the front foot, they do get Brian White involved in hold up play. And he does touch the ball a fair amount. He does combine with Ryan Gauld. And there literally wasn't any of that in this match. And so I think that just goes to show that right off the bat, as you said, that, like the Ryan Raposo yellow card, that aggression, that attempt to be on the front foot was countered almost immediately by Houston. And Houston never really gave them a chance. I mean, if we're doing the boxing analogy, it's like in the very first round, Houston came out and stunned the Whitecaps. And at that point, when you're stunned, the aggressive approach kind of goes out the window. And unless you have a good plan B, it's really hard to, you know, get yourself back in the fight, right? And so I actually thought that ultimately we can kind of progress through the match a little bit. Okay, so the Whitecaps concede some fouls early because they're trying to be aggressive and they're maybe getting caught out a little bit, you know, lunging at things and whatnot. Ultimately, the Herrera free kick goal, like, it's a bit unlucky. Okay, it takes a deflection off the wall, whatever. You know, you shouldn't have conceded 3 great set piece opportunities like that. But even if you do, you go down 1-0, it's a bit of a wake up call. And then I felt like the Whitecaps did an okay job the rest of the half, for the most part, just kind of feeling things out, staying alive. You know, you get to halftime, you make some substitutions and you reapproach the second half. But then to concede right before the half, and obviously I think really of the four, I mean, all 4 goals, certainly the last 3 were a bit egregious defensively for the Whitecaps, but certainly that second one with Griffin Dorsey just kind of wandering into the box and finishing, I mean, with a nice shot and a quality finish at the end of the day. But the way Tristan Blackman gave him acres of space, the way the whole team just sort of, you know, backed up and conceded ground deep into their own box, it was a tough look. And ultimately, in terms of both, you know, score line and timing, I think a real backbreaker, because I was telling you at least how I felt before the show, Alex, that, you know, if they make it into that half down 1-0, I do feel like there's a genuine chance for them to regroup and, you know, find something in the second half. Maybe ultimately you still lose 2-1, but it had the chance to be very competitive. And then, you know, really second 45, it felt like they were always chasing it. And, you know, it was a huge uphill battle. So to me, that's really the tail of the match was the first half, and was especially those, you know, those closing stages where they weren't able to get it to the break. And that's where, you know, okay, the initial game plan didn't work. you've survived. Now you have to regroup, and they just didn't give themselves that chance, unfortunately.
Yeah, look, and I think it's something. It's just like that was the game, because if it was 1-0, they could have still won this game. Yes, it was a lot to ask, but at 1-0, you go to the half, you can regroup, you bring on some fresh legs like they did. It can be a whole new game. At 2-0, I think the best case scenario is, okay, maybe that red card, which we can get to, that should have been given maybe on that tackle from, I think, was Corey Baird, right? Classic Whitecaps. It's always Baird. Either he's scoring or either he's killing guys. say that's given as a red. I think best case scenario, you get 2-2. Like, I don't think they were winning. Like, it was just too much to ask. The set piece delivery all game was lacking. Like, I think the moment that summed up the game was Ryan Gold got that ball. And I think in the second half, it was still 2-0. Great touch inside. And he just missed. Like, he picked his corner and just missed. And it's kind of like, okay, it's one of those games. Like, it happens, right? Like, even Ryan Gold's human. He's not going to be, scoring every shot that he hits and hitting every pass. But I think best case scenario, you get a 2-2 when you go down to 2-0. And that's, again, relying on a red card, relying on, you know, everything just to turn around. At 1-0, there was still a chance. And I think especially the goal you give up, it's something like, if it's the another deflected free kick, you just kind of laugh. Like, all right, it's not our day. Like, you know, it's just, you know, we had some great luck on the road. It's come up to bite us. Like, you know what, we'll scratch this. But it was just the fact that Griffin Dorsey was able to walk into your box like that and rip one top corner. Like, that's a dream of any, like, semi-professional, any Sunday league player dreams of being able to walk in and rip one top corner. Like, I think that's something that,
it looked a little bit like he almost didn't know what to do with himself at first. And then he had to, like, compose himself, and then it was a great finish. But there was that moment where it was like, wait a minute, really? Okay.
Well, that's it. Cause I'm like, I don't blame him. Cause I'm like, that's one of those where it's like, you don't want to go into the whole, like, oh, I could do that. Like, these are professionals playing at a high level. But something like, with the space he was given to cut in and shoot, I'd at least like to fancy that I'd give myself, you know, a 50-50 chance of putting it in the back of the net. Like, he had so much time. And I think it was rough to watch. It was just so sloppy, and it was so much ball watching. And it was one of those where it genuinely was ball watching, because my initial impression was Tristan Blackman actually did a fine job on that. Like, overall, he kind of struggled across the game itself. But on that one, he kind of, like, as a defender, you let the guy cut in, because you're facing a guy 1v1. You're letting him cut in. It was kind of almost like he put Dorsey into an area where there should have been a second guy right away on him. Like, there should have been pressure. And it almost felt like the Whitecaps, once Blackman allowed Dorsey to cut in. And to be fair, this is something where maybe should Dorsey have passed instead of shot earlier? Absolutely. Like, there was a 3-on-2, and Dorsey, for my money, with my initial impression, he should have made the early cross, because there was someone wide open at the back post. And I think if he hits that, it also would have been a goal. But once Dorsey held on, the Whitecaps cut in, they thought he was going to pass. They still should have forced him into a decision. And the fact that by doing nothing, it then opened up the shot that, again, most Sunday league players would back themselves. And that was just, that was like, you know, that can't happen. That was just too soft. That was, you know, too much ball watching. And that's a goal you just can't give up against a team like Houston. Again, if it was something where he cuts in and he takes a contested shot because one of the midfielders got on him and it deflects off the midfielder and goes in, you kind of just laugh and be like, all right, that's, again, not your day. But the fact that he was able to walk in and have an uncontested shot, yeah, maybe they got bit thrown off by being such an unconventional decision from Dorsey, but still it was one that they just couldn't allow. And I think that was the game really for me. I think after that, it was kind of like, what do you even do at that point? You're already down 2-0 against a good Houston team. And obviously it did get worse from there.
Yeah. So we've talked general defensive struggles, but I did want to talk a little bit about the players specifically on the back line. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast recently knows that we've at least hinted at the possibility of Matias Laborda being tried out in the middle of a back three. And yeah, team-wise, it did not go well, and it wasn't a good defensive performance, but I actually thought Laborda was okay. He was fine in that center of the back three. And I didn't see a lot of the swashbuckling, like, massive risk-taking moments from Laborda. He did seem to you know, obviously understands that the roles and responsibilities there are different. What was very noticeable was Jevaine Brown and Tristan Blackmon not looking super comfortable. And I think that's where the value of Ranko in the middle, we maybe bemoan, you know, his swashbuckling nature at times, his ability in the air to maybe just like be dominating the way you imagine he could be. But I think the way, you know, the organization, the communication, that's where it felt like it was really lacking, both Jevaine and Tristan kind of floating in space at times and, you know, not having those same reference points that they're used to. And I think it's tough. Jevaine Brown coming off, you know, a busy stretch playing a couple full 90s for Jamaica, now getting back into the squad. Tristan Blackmon's played a lot, obviously. And then Matias Laborde in a new role. Again, I just, for me, up against a really good informed Houston team midweek in the Heat, it was too many new variables in the mix. And so I guess I come away from this match, you know, I'm not necessarily all that concerned. Tristan Blackmon will regain his form. That's not a concern. I did kind of like some of what I saw from Laborde in the middle. So I wouldn't completely discount that as a future option, but ultimately they need Ranko back in there. And it'll be interesting to see what they go with this upcoming weekend in RSL. Do they go back to Blackmon, Laborde, and Ranko? Does Jevaine get another start? Will Luis Martins ever return from injury purgatory? We shall see.
Yeah, will Luis Martins exit the painful power of the exercise bike that has haunted him over the last few weeks? We'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those where it ultimately came down to defending. And look, that's kind of been the story of the Whitecaps season. It feels like, again, what this team ends up being is going to come down to defending. Because look, this is, like we've mentioned, this offense is special. This offense has a chance to be special. You know, the numbers that Gold and White are putting up, the XG numbers, like all this is unheard of. It's just really, how far can this defense take them? And ultimately in a game like this, but yes, because the Whitecaps were off offensively, no doubt. Again, like I mentioned, like so many of the set piece deliveries, even that shot from Gold. There's a few other examples where just, you know, maybe on another day they're going in. You're not winning a game on the road where you're conceding four. Like, that's just not happening, especially if you're down two by halftime. Again, especially the fact that the goals were avoidable. Again, even the deflected goal, yes, it was awful, like luck, but also you gave up a pretty, you know, you gave up a foul you didn't really need to give up on the you know, the free kick before. That's something where those little details can come back to haunt you. And again, those for the Whitecaps defensively, it just feels like there's too often where these little details are haunting them, where they're not doing those little things. And it hurts because for as good and as special as this offense is, they do their best work in 0-0 games or games when they're leading, when they can really, you know, put the opposing backline under pressure. Whereas, as we've seen all year, they struggle when they go down a goal because other teams can kind of sit back and really take away the space from them. And it's not so much that they struggle to break down the low blocks at times, but it's like when they're breaking down low blocks, they just put themselves way too open to counterattack situations. And that's where they really can get hurt defensively, like we saw in the second half. Like they were just getting torched on the counter by Houston. That third goal is just, it was rough to watch at that point. And yeah, it just shows the importance that for this defense, they need to find ways. And again, it was a worry again against TFC that they gave up the first goal. Again, against NYCFC, they gave up the first goal. They need to find a way to score, to, you know, hold off the opponents long enough to score first, especially that we're looking at TFC, Chicago, and now Houston. All the first goals they allowed were sloppy. Like, again, it's one of those where if someone comes down and just beats you, scores a world, he does something, like you just kind of laugh. Like, all right, that's soccer sometimes. But if you're giving away avoidable first goals when you know that your team, like for your team to be at their best, the way the Whitecaps play, they're not one of those teams that they go down and then they play their best football. They play their best football when it's 0-0 or when, you know, when it's tied or when they're leading. And the, you know, to do that, they need to avoid some of these goals they're giving up defensively.
Well, since now that you mention it, something I'd like to go back and take a little bit of a deeper dive into is, you know, they've scored a bunch of, like, not just first goals, but really early goals inside the opening 10 minutes. So I wonder how many matches the Whitecaps played in the last 3-4 months where they've not scored inside the opening 10 minutes and they've still scored the first goal. Because it kind of feels like one or the other at the moment, where they score early on, they take control and they never look back, or the other team scores first. And then, you know, obviously Toronto's kind of, they were able to regroup pretty quickly. But that's interesting that it's kind of gone one or two ways for the Whitecaps in most of these matches. The other thing from the Houston matchup, which is funny, is, man, what a tough matchup for the road team this season. Houston allows 6 at BC Place. The Whitecaps allow 4 at Shell Energy Stadium. And as very well pointed out on Twitter, the Whitecaps won the matchup ultimately with that late own goal, 7-6 on aggregate over the two matches this season between those two teams, which I thought was funny. Alex, I mean, final, we've hinted at it a lot here, but I think final big talking point from Houston was, you know, not maybe as prominent as the NYCFC match, but ultimately the officiating decisions in this one, not great. Some early yellow cards, some early foul calls that certainly didn't help the Whitecaps. And then that big moment, really, where with Corey Baird, where, you know, especially for a guy in Ali Ahmed, who's already suffered like a major injury this season on a tackle, on a collision, I really, really grimaced when I saw that on the broadcast, because that's never good to see. Glad that Ali is okay. And you know, obviously, I think it goes without saying, given our commentary, that we don't think refereeing is why the Whitecaps lost this match. But yeah, just again, maybe, you know, a bit of this MLS throwback vibe that a couple of these matches have had recently.
Well, look, I want to get to that. Just because you threw it out there, I went back and checked. So all competitions since the start of May, this is as far back as I've made it, there's only been 3 games in which the Whitecaps either didn't score the first goal inside 30 minutes or the other team scored first, if that makes sense. Like every other game, the other team either scored the goal first goal or the Whitecaps scored the first goal inside the first 30 minutes. So those 3 games are away to York United on May 10th. So they scored the first goal in the second half after you know, very tepid and cagey first half.
We can kind of throw that one out almost, really.
The other one was Seattle at home, 2-0. Pedro Vite scores in the 44th minute in a 2-0 win. And then the other one was the Canadian Championship final, where the Whitecaps didn't make their breakthrough until the second half when Brian White scored on the bit of the mix-up at the back for Montreal. Other than that, every other game in all competitions, every other one, the other team either scored first or the Whitecaps scored their first goal within the first 30 minutes.
So that clarifies then my feeling of every time I've sat down and watched an MLS match, it feels like it's one of those two outcomes. And that's because since May, it has been. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
So, yeah, I mean, it shows that if you're the Whitecaps defense, if it's the 30th minute and you haven't scored first and hopefully you haven't conceded, then throw an extra defender back there or something, because it's about to get chaotic. But in terms of, yeah, I thought that was worth putting in. In terms of the officiating, yeah, it was just a bit surprising, because it was just like it just kind of lacked flow and lacked chop. And I think it's worth noting, because I felt, I mean, you see very differing opinions. I feel like in most MLS games I watch, the officiating has been really good this year. Like, I watch and it's like either I'm not noticing it at all, which is always good, because it usually means there's good flow, good decisions, or even then I'm almost noticing on the other side, like, whoa, this is like really good, like good yellow, like good awareness, good review. And it was just a bit surprising, because I didn't watch this game with audio. Like, I just, the Apple commentators have been a bit chaotic lately. I was, you know, also had something else on the background, so I was watching without commentary. So it's almost like you get your unfiltered thoughts, because sometimes, you know, it can be biased. I mean, Sam was mentioned that on the Berhalter Phantom Yellow, that the commentator is like, oh, you can't do that, it was disgusting. And I was kind of like, he didn't, you know, really touch the guy. It was just, yeah, it was surprising, because it wasn't even just like the Ahmed missed red or the Berhalter like Phantom Yellow. It's just from the start, it was like Raposo got a yellow, and I was like, okay, he got his shirt, but a yellow that early, it wasn't really that threatening. And there's even a few free kicks Vancouver won where I'm like, okay, that's, you know, one where Vancouver got a bit a bit lucky to win that. And it was just overall the flow and the consistency of the game just felt off. And I think it's worth noting because the officiating on a plus side to shout it out has been so good over the year that when there is a choppy game like that, you're almost thrown off because I've personally felt like MLS has struck a good balance that I haven't noticed while watching. And I think it's just unfortunate because, yeah, look, you can the choppiness, the missed yell, like the early yellows, whatever. That's for me, like sometimes it happens. Sometimes you just the flow is off in a game and that ends up happening. But the missed red for me, I was really surprised that one didn't even get called back because, I mean, Baird went right through Ahmed. It wasn't near the ball. Like I was surprised it wasn't even like reviewed in the sense that he looks okay. Maybe he sees something he doesn't like, move on. But the fact that it went on without a review, because look, I mean, I'm curious. I'm sure Dorsey might get a retroactive fine for his dive on Berhalter, yada yada yada. But it's like that myth. The fact that the Baird one didn't even go to review was a bit of a surprise. Because look, I don't think the Whitecaps go and win this game if Houston's down to 10. I think at best they etch out a 2-2 draw, but it could have made things entertaining. Maybe they do etch out that draw, and as we know, a draw would have been good for them in their hopes. And you know, you'd like to avoid moments like that, especially because it impacted his safety. Like, you know, Ahmed got cleaned out and it was good that he was able even to carry on and keep running, because, you know, a tackle like that, you get it wrong, it's you're talking something much worse.
Yeah, like you, I think I was quite surprised that there was not at least like a courtesy VAR review there, you know, one of those ones where it's like, hey, even if there's no real intention to give red, we're just going to have a look at this one because it's a, you know, it's a major tackle and the ball wasn't really there at all. So I was definitely a bit surprised by that. Ultimately, I mean, as you said, I think that officiating for me in MLS this season has been, for the most part, something I've not even thought about, which is a massive compliment, because, you know, that's kind of the point of good officiating, is that it's there to enforce the rules. And other than that, you just don't really think about it. So yeah, I give credit to the crews overall. I think that it's been really solid, but, you know, a couple points recently where maybe it's been less than ideal. And yeah, you just don't want, you don't want that to become a storyline or that to impact the result in any way. And, as we mentioned, I think in this one, it didn't affect the end result, but nonetheless, something worth noting. Alex, any final thoughts from this Houston matchup? I'm kind of trying to think back. I mean, the Junior Hoylett debut, I guess we haven't said anything. Ultimately, it's disappointing that it came when they were already down 2-0, but I thought certainly like inside the opening 10 minutes of the second half, there were a couple bright spots, seeing Hoylett doing his work up front, trying to combine and create something was encouraging. And I think this is the, I said it on the last show, but you know, he's going to be a utility player for this team. He's going to come in and fill whatever role you need him to fill. And I think, you know, do a really good job and also be probably a big, you know, a big voice in the locker room and a good leader for some of the young guys like an Ali Ahmed, who's, you know, kind of working his way up within the Canadian system. So looking forward to seeing more from Hoylett. I think that's something certainly to mention from this Houston match. Nice to see him in Whitecaps colors.
Yeah, and I think, look, we know he can bring quality on the ball, so it's not surprising that, you know, he's able to have some flashes. I think for me, the big thing that's impressive too is that, like, how fit he is already. Like, because he's someone who's played, like, what, like two or three matches since April? Like, because it's just, or not two or three, but still, like, other than the Gold Cup, other than, I think, a brief cameo at Nations League, you know, he's been without a club, just training, and, you know, his championship season ended early because Reading got relegated. And, you know, this is someone who's barely played since May, April, and yet Fanny Sartini, since he's come and said, look, Hoylett's really fit. Like, he was immediately on the bench against TFC, goes 45 in his debut. Like, heck, even guys like Larea and Adekugbe, like, Larea was in season as of before July 1st. And, you know, Adekugbe, similar situation, to be fair, to Hoylett. But even both of those guys were kind of eased in at 45. I think that's encouraging because, you know, he'll be able to really step into that bench role. And it's nice to know that over those last few games, if you need a spell to start for Gauld, especially if Gauld's going to keep racking up. Like, again, that's another thing that I thought was a bit surprising. why was Gault still on at 3-0 away to Houston when you have two must-win games over the next week? Well, not must, pretty important games over the next week. But the nice thing is that if the approach is give Gault 90s and then rest him fully for a game, at least you know that Hoilett should be fit enough to really put in a shift when called upon. So I thought that was, you know, encouraging.
I guess the other thing too, just kind of going down the bench here is, I mean, we saw some appearances from guys we haven't seen in a while in Whitecaps colors. Simon Boettcher came in the 67th, Lavonte Johnson 77th, JC Ngondo 85th. It was just good to see those guys. I feel like Boettcher's been in the abyss for a long time. Kind of, you know, his escapades from early on in the season feel like a lifetime ago at this point. Ultimately it was, as Vanni Sartini said post-match, it was sort of glorified fitness work at the end of that match. They weren't really consequential minutes, but nonetheless, just good to see those guys out there. I think this is well advertised. I definitely have my concerns about, like, Simon Boettcher. It's a great story, but I think his impact as an MLS striker, I certainly have some pretty serious questions still. But good to see those guys out there get some minutes at least.
Absolutely, and we'll see if they get minutes in the next Whitecaps game. But speaking of, we're gonna, you know, let's shift gears and dive right into RSL away, as that's now the next Whitecaps game. Then they go to Colorado away, and then they're back at home against DC finally after, you know, a couple over a month away, I guess it is, for that one. So you know, RSL, it's a bit of an interesting one because this is another big six pointer. The Whitecaps dropped a six pointer against Houston. This one, I mean, it's another six pointer. Whitecaps are in fifth, RSL is in sixth, just 1 point behind. With the game over, the Whitecaps do have a game in hand. So if they win, they could, you know, conceivably create 4 points as separation with the game in hand. So they could really narrow that. They can extend that gap to 7, assuming they go out and then win their game in hand. And the good news is, too, that RSL isn't in the greatest form right now. I'm looking back in all competitions. They've lost 6 of their last 7. Of course, 2 of those losses. One was a 4-0 drubbing by LAFC in League's Cup. The other one was a 3-1 loss to the, you know, Houston Dynamo in Open Cup. Houston now in the final against Miami in that competition. But in, you know, in League's Cup, they had a decent run. They beat Leon, which, as we know, was a good outfit that gave the Whitecaps trouble. They beat Leon in the knockout stages before their drubbing by LAFC. But since then, since their return to MLS play, they've lost to Houston. They've lost to Portland. They beat a Colorado team that's tied for last. And then they lost to San Jose and they lost to Dallas. So that's a lot of six-pointers they've lost over the last few games. So you could also look at it that they'll be fired up to come in and not lose another game to a Western rival to kind of nip this slump in the bud. But it is worth noting that it's certainly they've fallen at the wrong time, which is surprising because we were talking about it pre-show. They've got a good roster. They've made some good mid-season acquisitions. I mean, Chicho Arango is kind of the big one, but even again, you look at their roster, there's some solid pieces, but it almost feels like maybe the new guys have kind of disrupted the rhythm they were on earlier in the year where they were flying heading into the summer.
Well, it's been a weird up and down year for RSL. I mean, they beat Vancouver in the first match of the season. They go up to BC Place and do it 2-1, right? And then they rattle off 4 losses in a row, 5 losses of their next 6. And then really prior to this recent losing skid, they'd been red hot. And it's like they were winning every other match and they were undefeated for a long stretch. Let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in a row. Wow. Where they were undefeated. So this has kind of been the tale of the Western Conference a little bit, hasn't it, Alex, this season, where teams are streaky, right? Like they find some form, they're playing incredibly well, and then they lose it. As we were talking about pre-show, like, you know, during that 10-game unbeaten run, it felt like RSL was flying high, and then they added some good names near the deadline. It felt like just made their squad better. And then since then they've really struggled. So something has been upset in the balance there a little bit. Ultimately, like the underlying numbers, you know, the XG stuff has not liked RSL the entire season. I mean, they've still got a negative goal differential. And I think a big part of that is they definitely have some blowout losses in there, especially early on in the season, back-to-back 4-0s against St. Louis and Columbus Crew that really hurt them. 3-0 loss to Los Angeles FC, and just some tough results, I think, that really set them back. So RSL does that have that potential, I think, a little bit. When things go against them, it can get a little bit ugly, but overall, this is a good team. I mean, you got, you know, Demir Krylak's been back this season after injury last year, and, you know, continues to, you know, he's maybe not the dominant force he once was, but there's, it's been nice to see him contribute a little bit. And then just really a whole host of, they got a whole host of South American attacking and midfield players that provide some danger. Chicho Horango recently added. Always liked Michael Chang, who's been a contributor here and there. And they rotate their squad a decent amount too. Like there's Justin Glad has 27 starts. Zach McMath has 23, but no one else has more than 21 starts. So they do spread things around a little bit. They've had some injuries, some changes to the squad as well. But Alex, curious for your thoughts on what you've seen. I think you've kind of been an RSL fan this year. You've liked what you've seen from them. So curious for your thoughts a little bit.
Yeah, I think RSL's made some good moves. I think that's the big thing, because they've quietly always been known for, like, yeah, they had Javier Morales back in the day, but they've kind of been one of those MLS teams that's kind of had a reputation for really not moving much. It's kind of like a lot bargain bin, and they made some big signings, trying to bring in someone like a Carlos Gomez for a whole host of money in the offseason. Brian Vera as well, another one for a good amount of money. They made a load for Moses Nyman, which wasn't, an interesting move that hasn't worked out. He's only played two appearances, but I thought that was an interesting move at the time, given he'd played in MLS and made that jump to Europe. Then they go and get Chicho Arango. That was, no messing around on that one. That's a proper, number nine who's gotten the job done in MLS on a good, team in LAFC. And then they also got Nelson Palacio in the summer as well, the Colombian midfielder. Like, so those are some good moves. And you look at their 11, the fact they can roll out the likes of Krylak, Arango, Palacio. They got this, Brian Ojeda in midfield, a 23-year-old Paraguayan who's, been seeing the field a lot. You still got Jefferson Savarino, who's got 6 goals, 3 assists on the year. You look at that backline as well. Gladden, Marcelo Silva is a good pairing. McMath is consistently, if you look at his numbers, like even dating to his time with the Whitecaps, he's always in the right, or in around the right numbers in terms of, goals above expected. Even if it's in the negatives, it's never more than 1 or 2, and usually sometimes in the positives. You add in, Pablo Ruiz is still around. They've got a solid outfit, but for whatever reason, they've kind of lost their consistency as of late. Also, shout out to Diego Luna as well. That's another bright player. I've been really impressed with the young American who's just 20 and 3 goals, 1 assist, and has been very electric. So, again, great pieces on RSL, but maybe it's something where just things aren't gelling right now. Maybe, it feels like they've also regressed a bit defensively. They lost 3-1 to Dallas in midweek at home, which is never the sort of results you want as a team. But there's definitely pieces for them to be dangerous, especially if they can get a bit of that defensive solidity that they've lost lately. Because I'm looking at their last games, it's 4 against LAFC, it's 3 against Houston twice, it's 2 Portland. Portland scored 2 against them. Then they shut out Colorado, but then San Jose put 2, and then Dallas put 3. Like, really feels like defensively is letting them down, and that makes sense because they've got the difference makers up front, especially if their defense can find a bit of form again.
Well, and I think something else that's indicative of that defensive inconsistency is the home and away record. I mean, they actually have more points on the road, 21 points, 6-3-5 away from RSL, and 5-4-6 at home. So you know, a lot of teams coming in and at least, you know, getting that draw, getting a result, only 5 wins at home. Again, kind of, I mean, honestly, impressive that they are where they are based on those home struggles and the fact they've been able to do so well on the road. So that's something I think the Whitecaps have to look at and have to think there's an opportunity there, both in terms of RSL's home record and their propensity for conceding some goals, because, you know, it's the opposite of the Houston matchup, where Houston had been red hot defensively, really limiting opportunities, and they did a good job of that against the Whitecaps. This RSL team's been struggling to keep the ball out of the back of their net. So I think Vancouver has to be licking their chops a little bit. You know, good opportunity for White and Gold to get back on form. Good opportunity for a Sam Adekubi, if he's going to get back into the lineup, to get involved. Whether it's Pedro Vite, Ali Ahmed, Alessandro Schopf getting back in there, just for some guys to light a spark a little bit. I think the Whitecaps could use a couple goals just to find that feeling again a little bit. So I think this is certainly an opportunity. We were talking, Alex, before the show about, you know, looking at the next couple matchups, and I sort of made the joke, but I think it's true also to some extent that Colorado, obviously, who's their next opponent, sitting right down at the bottom of the Western Conference standings, they're a mess right now. You've got supporters groups walking out mid-match, complete dysfunction and disarray with the Rapids. And yet, I feel like the Whitecaps would happily take 3 points against Real Salt Lake if it meant they only got 1 point or they didn't get any points in Colorado, because obviously, you know, you give 3 points to the Rapids, you give a point to the Rapids, it doesn't really matter. They're languishing at the bottom of the standings, but you give points to RSL and all of a sudden that's a problem for you. That's not just a problem because you failed to capitalize it. You know, it makes things more crowded. It creates less room for you near the top of the Western Conference. So I'm very curious, Alex, how they will approach these next two matches, especially based on the way they approach things in Houston. I don't know if it was me. I think I would go, you know, bring out all the big guns for RSL and then just see how that goes and worry about Colorado later. But I wonder how they will set up for this one. Ultimately, I think getting blown out a little bit in Houston did give them the chance to at least manage some fitness levels, manage some energy. Some guys coming out at halftime, getting early rest. So, curious to see how this one goes. I think that I was always going into the Houston matchup pretty cautious about how it was going to go. I thought best case scenario, they'd get a draw out of it. And ultimately, you know, that game plan didn't work out, but I have a higher degree of confidence about them going down to Salt Lake. I think there's a good opportunity to get some points here.
Yeah, and I mean, to that point, I think when we mentioned the overconfidence against Houston, well, you could also say they also rotated. They obviously had their eyes on this RSL game, and maybe this is something where they viewed the Houston game as a bit of a punt. And I think, well, first off, if they go winning against RSL, it also, you know, I think it rewards the faith. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think the fact that Ranko's rested, I mean, I would have liked to see a bit more rest for Gold in the latter stages of the Houston game. But that's another story. But you know, you rested Schopf, who's kind of been your go out and defensive ace almost this year, right? He's been your, you call on him. And if you need a bit more defensively, yeah, you look at some of the other rotation, like they didn't push Sam Adekugbe at all. So maybe it's something where he's closer to fitness. And I think that's worth noting because there is that 2-day turnaround for both teams that they played Wednesday, and then it's Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see the rotation. For what it's worth, I dove in RSL's underlying numbers. They're a borderline bottom 10 team in terms of expected goals against. So that kind of goes to the point, you know, earlier about them struggling defensively. That's also showing in the underlying numbers. They're Not doing well defensively, but they're also a borderline top 10 team offensively. So they got the offense to push. I think it's like they have 37 XG for and 39 XG against. So that kind of is about right, because I think the Whitecaps are like around 45 XG, at the top of the mountain, which again, still so surreal to be throwing that out this late in the season. I'm curious to see as well how they attack that defense, because Houston's defense isn't much better, to be fair. Like they've conceded 36 XG, which is very mid-table, but also, as I saw, Houston also has a solid offense, and they're in good form, whereas this RSL team's defense is struggling. They're not in good form. So it'll be interesting to see also the approach, because I think Shop's going to start. I think Kubas is going to start, because he took him off at halftime for a reason. It's just a matter of, okay, what is that third midfield like? What's the approach look like? But this feels like one that Caps should go in and push for a win against RSL, and I think it would do a world of good for them.
Yeah, do we have any final RSL thoughts here? Do we want to dive into predictions?
Well, let's do some predictions, especially after we skipped Houston. We've been on a bit of a roll lately with predictions, because been putting on some wins, and I think they've actually, I mean, the Whitecaps finally started winning games on the road, and
I was feeling good. I got the 1-1 against NYCFC as well, but ultimately I predicted a one. I went 1-1 again for Houston, so took a bit of a swing and a miss on that one in written form. I'm going to go back for a classic scoreline. I don't feel like I predicted a 2-1 in a while, so I'm going to go 2-1 Vancouver Whitecaps. I feel like this is going to be ultimately a bit of a coin toss one. This could be 1-1 going into the 75th minute, and it's just, who gets the deciding goal. And heck, you know what I'll say? I'll say Junior Hoilett, first goal in Whitecaps colors, gets the decider late on.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-2 draw. I think there's goals in this game for the Whitecaps, but after their defensive showing in midweek, RSL at home, bad slump, they've got good pieces. I think it'll be a high event game. Ultimately,
keeping RSL to one goal might be a challenge, eh?
Yeah, I mean, especially after the 4 in Houston, I think it's one of those where it's a 2-2 draw where kind of no one's happy, because the Whitecaps are like, oh, we should have won this, and RSL's like, we should have won this. And then you go into Colorado with a bit of frustration and your road trip on a high note. I don't know. I just feel like it's something where we'll see. Well, it's something, because it's worth noting that for whatever reason, the Whitecaps have been really good against Eastern Conference this year. Like, if I'm not mistaken, the stats out there that they haven't like lost to the Eastern Conference. So that also helps explain their road form, because for whatever reason, they just have, I don't know if it's, the fact that they have a lot of guys from out East or something, but they've been good against the East, whereas the West, as we've seen, I guess technically they, other than beating LAFC away, they haven't beaten a team on the road from the West. So they're going to have to go out and, prove me wrong. So until proven wrong, I'm going with the 2-2 draw.
That's fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, to wrap up the show here, let's transition away from Major League Soccer to a little bit of CPL talk. Alex, mixed bag, I guess, for the two BC Canadian Premier League teams. I mean, ultimately we knew this was coming, but Vancouver FC officially eliminated from the playoff race. That was a long time coming, but they did just get a win over Valor, and I believe in the process eliminated Valor from playoff contention as well. So they're able to play spoiler there a little bit. And again, Vancouver FC, they've been getting a few results lately. I think they've been more fun to watch recently, which is nice. And then kind of flipping things over to Pacific, it's going to be a tall task now to really unseat Cavalry for that top spot, but they've clinched a playoff spot. They're sitting in a good position, I think. And a big win over York, good evidence of that recently. So, maybe not the ideal dream CPL table in terms of BC teams. Pacific was looking so good mid season. Vancouver FC maybe thought with some of those additions that they were going to make a late push for a playoff spot. ultimately neither of those things look like they've come to pass, but I think nonetheless positive storylines for both teams. And I have to give a shout out to my Wanderers as well, a massive 3-2 result over Ottawa. So you know, vaulted themselves up into a slightly more secure fourth spot in the table at the moment.
Yeah, look, one day we'll have a Vancouver Pacific playoff game. What a game, what a day that will be when that happens. I can't wait. But in terms of Vancouver, look, I think credit has to be given because it's obviously been tough. It's an expansion team, and you know it's one of those where sometimes it feels like they could be better than they've been, but also you have to remember it's a first year team. I think there's some things worth noting from like first of all, the fact that they made it all the way to match day 24, even still alive, or match day 23, like that's still something where many expect them to be eliminated after 20 games. Like the fact they're still at least alive mathematically, that's good. The thing is, too, the one box they ticked off with their goal against Valor, which again, shout out to 16-year-old TJ Taheed, scores his third goal of the season. He got called up to the Canadian men's U17 team for friendlies against Brazil. Surely he's a lock to make the World Cup squad as well later this year. 16-year-old playing professionally now has three goals. Great goal, too, if you have a chance to watch it. Hits it on the half volley as well. We don't have to say what we were doing at 16, but I wish I could. I wish I had that in my locker at that age. Now that means they've scored against every team in the league. Which, hey, that's impressive. That means goals against Forge, goals against Calgary. That's never easy. They've also gotten points off everyone in the league. And if I'm not mistaken, the only team they haven't beaten is Cavalry, because they beat York, they beat Pacific, they beat Halifax, they beat York, and they beat Valor now. I think Valor is also the one team they haven't beat, actually, because it was 0-0. So Valor and Calvary are the only two teams they haven't beat, but they've gotten points off everyone. Hey, those are worth, you know, noting in a first year. Because I remember last year, unfortunately, FC Edmonton, they got beat up by teams like Forge. I know Forge really got 12 points or something, or not 12. I think they got 10 points off them. And they're, you know, sometimes these teams could be a target. But I thought Vancouver made a good job of, especially being competitive, other than the Ottawa blowout at home. There weren't too many games like that, and that's also encouraging.
They just beat Valor, though, correct?
Oh, they did. Sorry,
was the one they had to tick. The one they had to tick off, and they beat. I don't know if you said, but they obviously
they just
that.
They haven't beat.
They got the big win over
Cavalry. They've beaten
Forge as well earlier this season. But yeah, I mean, Cavalry's been a tough out, so that's fair enough.
Yeah, and the fact they even got, you know, they've drawn Calgary as well. Like, and, you know, they drew Calgary down to 10 men for most of the game. And then the second time they played Calgary at home, they also went down to 10 men early, and that also hurt them. So, you know, like, just to say, like, credit to Vancouver for fighting and making it interesting. And I'm just curious to see how things go, because they obviously learned a lot in year one about, you know, their squad and tactics and what works. So I'm curious to see what, you know, ends up happening in the future. And I think one trend we've really seen, especially at Pacific, Vancouver's got a lot of U21 minutes, and maybe that also, you know, hurt them a bit in year one, that they had a lot of guys learning on the fly. Like, not only are you an expansion team, but you're getting a lot of kids out on the field. That stuff will also pay off over time. Like, remember Pacific, they struggled in year one of the CPL, but they were, you know, one of the best teams at getting U21s on the field. And then as they did end up becoming a title winning team, a lot of those U21 guys ended up being difference makers, and we've seen examples of that as well, where sometimes these players will get minutes and then, you know, that with the experience they end up really thriving. So I'm curious to see what the future holds for some of those guys, like Taheed, like, who, again, Taheed's going to be providing U21 minutes for four more seasons at this point if he isn't sold by then. You add in James Cameron as well, he's just 18, so he's going to be U21 eligible next year. You know, Tyler Crawford's just 19. Anthony White looks like he could be, you know, a piece at center back. Like, all these guys are going to grow from it, and it's only going to help them as well. So, yeah, it's something where it's, you know, bittersweet for Vancouver to be eliminated. You never want to be eliminated, but it was always about building for next year. And I think they can look at a couple of blocks as well. The fact that they've got some good signings, like someone like Alejandro Diaz, clearly, you know, just struggling to find fitness and form. I'm sure after an offseason, he'll have to be reinvigorated to come back. And there's countless other examples of that. So I'm interested to see how this Vancouver team does, because I know as well that they're going to also keep gunning to improve their roster in the offseason. They can make some interesting moves to further complement their squad.
Well, that was just like the last question on Vancouver FC I was going to ask you is, you know, to what extent do you obviously you want to improve your squad, but at the same time, early on in the expansion franchise, too much roster turnover is not a great thing. And you mentioned all those young guys that you want to sort of build up and see them develop. Do you think they try to walk a tightrope of make the team better, but like not make too many changes so that they can really hit the ground running next season? Because you can only do, you know, they've already essentially had what's felt a bit like two roster turnovers this season. They had the initial expansion team. They made a lot of changes mid-season. They have to be a little bit wary of doing that all again before the start of 2024.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where they have to be careful. I think it's nice they have some core pieces. I don't think Callum Irving's going anywhere yet. Feels like, you know, I think if for him at this stage that he's playing at home, his next move would be retiring, and I haven't seen any signs that he's planning on retiring anytime soon. Rocco Romeo is a good piece to build around at the back. Good age, center back profile. Caden Cheung is back at home. Can't imagine he's going anywhere for a while. Then you look in midfield, your Elliot Simmons, your Gabby Batars. If you can sign someone like Vasco Fry, because he's technically on loan, that would be a nice piece. You look up front, Mickey Cantav, Alejandro Diaz. They'll have certainly a question to answer with Sean Hundahl, who started the year so well and just hasn't been able to get in the team consistently as of late. But there's definitely some core pieces there. And then you add in the youngsters that I mentioned earlier. There's definitely building blocks there. So I don't think there'll be too much turnover, but there's definitely, I think you look at the team, you could use some more depth in midfield, maybe even chase another starting number eight in midfield. They need to figure out what to do up front, because they have this weird combination where they have a couple wingers and a couple tens, but it's hard. Like, they're always seeming to play like a front three of a 10 winger striker, or like a front three of two strikers and a 10, or two strikers and a wing. Like, it just feels like the front three also, they could use a piece that gives them a bit more clarity up front, like either another winger and they play without and out wingers, or they get another 10 and they really commit to playing with more like 10 style wingers. And then also maybe another piece at the back, right? Just, he could always use another center back, especially, I think, after Pele Martinez was released. Could use another center back there. But look, that's, you know, for an expansion team, that's the fact that they've already got a core built. I remember when Ottawa came to the league, it wasn't the case. They you look at the team that ended up, you know, that they threw out in 22 versus the team that was there in 2020. Like, it was night and day. And I don't think for Vancouver, I think you look at this team, I could see a lot of this team still around in a year, 2 years time. And that's a good start, at least.
No, absolutely. I think that's encouraging. Okay. Flipping things over to Pacific. We obviously mentioned that maybe that top spot in the table is looking a little bit distant at the moment, but Alex, I'm just looking at this schedule remaining for Pacific, and boy, this is spicy. You've got Pacific taking on Forge this upcoming weekend in the Hammer, and this is the 2 and 3 spot in the table going head to head. You know, we were talking about 6-pointers in MLS play. This is a 6-pointer in the CPL. And then you've got once more the Salish Sea Derby, and then obviously Pacific and Cavalry on the final regular season day. So what a sprint to the finish line this is going to be for the Tridents. I mean, what are your thoughts on those last three matchups, and what Pacific can try to accomplish as they head into the postseason here?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. The Forge one's a huge one, because I think they win that, they finish top two, I think. And if they do, that's good, right? Because it gives you the difference between top two, second and third is huge, because first, of course, you get the trophy, which, by the way, the new trophies finally came out for all that today, which is cool to see. I think finally they've kind of got that balance right, because having the shield as a trophy, as the playoff trophy was cool, but I do like that they reworked it to have a shield as the regular season winner and now a proper cup for the playoff winner. I think that's probably what it should have been from day one, but I think it's still good that, hey, like they say, better late than never. Of course, we'll reserve judgment till we see the actual cup, but the shield they put out there was, you know, was nice and certainly looks to be better received than the famed microwave plate was when it first came out. So, and that is actually now gone. So rest in peace to the North Star Shield. You know, Pacific ended up winning one, Forge ended up winning three. Whoever ends up lifting the next one will actually lift the North Star Cup. So just some updates there for those who've been unfamiliar. As for Pacific, all that to say, the difference between second and third is huge. Because first and second there, yes, you don't get the trophy. Yes, you don't get the CONCACAF Champions Cup spot. But finishing second, you still get two shots at the final. You get the first game. If you win that, you host. If not, you go down to a second game, which is also for the final. Whereas if you're in third, yes, you get a host, the fourth or fifth team. But then you have to go on the road against whichever loses the first for second game. Then you're going to be on the road in the final. So it just makes it that much tougher. So I think if Pacific beats Forge, they'll be in that top two. And they've been good in Ontario this year. It's worth noting. They beat Ottawa 4-1 and drew Ottawa away. They drew York away and they beat York 4-1 away. They've also beat Forge away. So based on the math, they're due a draw in this game, which even also wouldn't be the worst in the world. So if they can keep that up, Vancouver at home, I expect a fired up Pacific, especially after losing the last derby in Vancouver. And then Calgary away, I mean, that one's going to be huge just because they've never beaten Calgary away in the regular season. So they're going to have to owe it to themselves. And who knows, it could be a title decider. Like if Calgary loses to York this weekend and Pacific beats Forge, the gap's just, I think it's down to three. And if they keep the gap to three, of course, gold and their goal differences are similar. It could mean that the last game could be a title decider. Like Pacific could win and could actually take the title if they win their next three and Calgary drops one, or if they win the next two and Calgary drops two. Like, so it's something where the title still is on the line. So may as well gun for it. But I think if you're Pacific, you at least want to be in that top two. And okay, maybe you don't get the regular season trophy. Maybe you don't get the CONCACAF Champions Cup spot, but you back yourself to go out and win another North Star Cup / Shield as you know, with the new change.
This is something that may appear obvious, but I'm just realizing it as you said it. So if Vancouver FC has never won against Cavalry, let alone in Calgary at Spruce Meadows, Pacific's never won at Spruce Meadows, and the Whitecaps have never won in regulation time at Spruce Meadows, that means none of those BC teams have ever secured like a regular because obviously the Whitecaps won in a penalty shootout in the Canadian Championship. But that's crazy that none of those BC teams have gone and in 90 minutes secured a 3-point result against
Cavalry. Pacific, if I'm not mistaken, Pacific, what they beat Cavalry twice at Spruce Meadows. One wasn't in regulation because it was in the 113th minute. But then I think the other one, I'll double check. I think it was in the 2021 Championship.
So you're just saying they haven't gone and won this year then?
Oh, no, they've never won in regular season play Spruce Meadows in CPL. But also, they've only won once in regulation because they beat Cavalry 1-0 in the 2021 Canadian Championship. So it's not looking good for them either historically.
Narrator, it's a tough place to play. That's the one thing that's very clear, especially if you're from the West Coast. I just that's an overwhelming theme that BC teams do not like going to Spruce Meadows. That's that's quite something.
Yeah, so I mean that's why I mean for drama's sake, if the title is on the line in that last game, that could be something, the storyline of, you know, never winning a first regular season game. I mean, the funny thing is, it's happened, like Pacific's been there before, because the funny thing that always stands out about their North Star Shield win over Forge, they'd actually never beaten Forge when they played them in that final. They'd never beaten Forge. Their first ever win against Forge was to lift the North Star Shield. I thought that was hilarious. And I think it's something where if another scenario was like that to occur, I mean, it's always fun to have those sorts of narratives because, yeah, I mean, you had this weekend, for example, where Forge hasn't beaten Valor away since in 4 years almost, and then they finally got a win away against Valor, and it's something where there, you know, you expect a team like Forge to you know, get some results in a game like that, yet they finally do, and it meant, you could see it meant a lot to them. And it's just, you know, it's always funny the intricacies of that, of a little, you know, of a new league where you play each other a lot, but there's some trends like that. Like, for example, Ottawa, I think, only has one win over Forge in their history. They've never beaten Forge at home, and Ottawa hosts Forge in the last, or Ottawa plays Forge in the last game. Like, it's going to be so funny, because Ottawa could conceivably head into that last game needing a win to make the playoffs with how things are going, and they've only beat Forge once. Like, I love those sorts of little statistical stories, because you know, it's especially in a small league, because it's something where in MLS, where there's so many teams, you can have trends like that, be like, whatever, that's just, it's almost funnier when they're more pronounced, because you play some of the teams more, like CPL, you're playing every team four times. So when there's a trend like that, it's kind of like, whoa, that's actually a bit more surprising.
Well, one of my favorite examples of that was the All-Canadian North Division in the NHL during that COVID-affected season, where I think, what was it, like all seven teams played against each other 10 times. And so you got this massive sample size of the same teams playing each other over and over again, which obviously in the NHL, you don't get much anymore, right? Like, this isn't the 70s or the 80s anymore, but it was really cool for that season. And you get that same thing in the CPL, where you develop these real historical trends, these teams playing each other over and over and over again, and you know, seeing what emerges. So looking forward to the final couple of weeks of the CPL regular season. It's been a ton of fun. It's those final playoff spots still tightly contested, hoping that the boys on the East Coast can grind it out. You know, and hopefully weather stays out of their way as well, because it's been my parents over there now on the East Coast. It's been crazy. You got fog, you got hurricanes, high winds, all kinds of stuff getting in the way. So, hopefully the Wanderers can escape that stuff the rest of the season. Alex, any final thoughts here? That was a pretty well-rounded show. Some couple Whitecaps matches, a little bit of CPL chat, a little bit of previewing RSL this upcoming weekend for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Any final thoughts here before we sign off?
Yeah, I mean, just another good weekend on tap. So just enjoy it. I mean, it's wild to think that in a few weeks this could all be gone. Of course, the European football is not going anywhere, and there's some great fixtures. The men's Champions League's back. The women's Champions League isn't that far behind. You know, all the major leagues are almost pretty much back. So again, if your addiction is of all football, then you're well covered. But certainly for those who love the North American game, it's a bittersweet time of the year, because it's the best time. Playoff clinching, must win, 6 points, playoffs. But then it's just wild to think that by November, it's all over in the CPL. The finals on the October 28th or 29th. And, you know, the regular season's done in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then in MLS, ditto, right? Like, the regular season's done in October, and the playoffs are done in November, and all of a sudden you're not, you know, no MLS till what, February, March, no CPL till April. It's going to be a long off season. So just got to enjoy it while you can, is what I'd say. Certainly I will be heading out to Vancouver or Langley this weekend for Vancouver Halifax. That should be a good game to see, you know, big one for Halifax. Vancouver is going to want to spoil their playoff hope, so I'll be excited for that. But of course, you can find me, you know, writing and tweeting about that on Twitter at Alex Gange Ruzic, and you can find me on Threads and IG at AGR on the case. And yeah, if you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review, because it always means a lot. We do appreciate those who've taken the time to do so. But on that, I'll throw it to Sam to close off the show.
Yeah, you can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. Give a big shout out. We've, you know, little boost in the listenership recently. I think with some of the new Canadians on the squad, the Vancouver Whitecaps playing well, we've had lots of people tuning in and listening. So I really appreciate you checking us out and supporting the show as well as the website. So thanks so much for that, everyone, and we'll chat again soon.